Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Thursday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber at the New York Stock Exchange. It is risk on, as China says it and the U.S. have agreed to remove tariffs in phases, although the market will be looking for details and further confirmation today as we wade through results from Qualcomm, Square, Roku, Expedia, and more. Europe is steady. Bank of England holds. 10-year yield getting in the neighborhood of 1.9 now, which some have talked as a resistance. Our roadmap begins with the trade rally. Futures point to new records at the open after China says it has agreed with the U.S. to roll back tariffs.
Plus, takeover offer. Give you my latest reporting on Xerox's bear hug of HP.
And Elizabeth Warren, Bill Gates, and the wealth tax. The presidential candidate proposes a sit-down with the Microsoft founder. We're going to begin, though, with futures today. Fresh hopes of a phase one trade agreement giving stocks a boost. China's Commerce Ministry says the U.S. and China have agreed to phase out the tariffs that were imposed during the trade war. Obviously, we're going to they don't actually say a deal has been reached, but multiple reports on this one from MOFCOM.
Yeah, I don't trust them. yesterday they said the talks are delayed. I mean, honestly, we're just these people are actually members of the People's Republic. It might as well be run by the PLA, by the Eighth Army. I can tell you what really did matter yesterday at the White House. They signed a death warrant for someone who pushed fentanyl to us, and two life sentences for their colleagues. There's a two-year stay of execution on the leader of this, but this is what President Trump's been waiting for. Far more important than any nonsense about tariffs. This is what they wanted. They wanted a signal that someone's going to be executed for fentanyl. They got it. That is big.
Why has that not been? That's clearly not the focus of the reporting this morning.
No, because everybody's wrong except for me. Carl, oh my God, did I really say that?
Usual.
I actually said that.
You didn't just think it, Jim.
Okay, let's understand each other. That the only thing at the they immediately came out. I absolutely love this. They said it has nothing to do with trade talks. Okay, I mean it has. They have not been tolerant on drug dealers. This is a guy by name Yu Hai Bing, and that the United States was limited in its help. The United States has done everything it can to try to find these guys. It is completely involved with the trade talks, and the Chinese government has had total tolerance for selling fentanyl. When I deal with my sources in the White House, they have been waiting for this, not rollback tariffs.
Well,
not rollback tariffs.
It'd be great because it's an epidemic.
Right.
It's
this is what President Trump cares
dead
about. President Trump has said
it's not obviously just fentanyl, but fentanyl now making its way into all sorts of things.
This is a precondition.
Right.
This was the precondition to talks. That's what matters. Now you can say that.
But as for trying to measure the other things and when they actually everything actually happens.
I meant to be as arrogant as I was. I mean, I didn't mean to be arrogant in that.
Well, you can't.
But no, I mean, my context with the White House say at last, because President Trump cares passionately about overdose, cares passionately about drug use. And he didn't even want to sit down until this of the seventh deadly sins was agreed to. He wanted to see these kinds of prosecutions. Now we can go forward and the president will play ball. He was not going to play ball.
By play ball, you mean?
I'm going to talk about
rolling
about
off
staying,
tariffs.
Not rolling off. Staying. Not rolling off.
So December 15th doesn't come off, but we don't add any more.
No. No, the president does not want to have the Chinese control the narrative because it will break down. But he was, I understand, very happy about the National Narcotics Control Commission not just being involved with sending us bad fentanyl, which is causing, as David said, a huge number of deaths in this country. It was a very big precondition, and this was important, so now there can be a real discussion. It's interesting that it came after yesterday's leak that there may not be or there'll be a delay. You know, this has been something that the president has been saying over and over and over again. And Peter Navarro has said over and over and over again, when are they going to crack down on fentanyl? And when they do, we'll talk trade.
So you think we do get some kind of agreement?
Yeah, we can now.
Signing in December, whether it's in Sweden or.
Yes, can now go forward because this was what the White House was really waiting for. I know it's underplayed in this country, but when you speak with them, this fentanyl epidemic is something that both parties share. And a lot of people know where that fentanyl comes from, which is China. The military knows. Everybody knows. So this is very positive.
All right. We'll see if this morning's run at a new record is justified. David?
Yeah. I want to follow up on our stories from yesterday, of course, involving Xerox's bear hug for Hewlett-Packard, or HP Inc., actually. can now give you some of the terms that were involved and what the letter actually contained with the offer that was sent to HP on Tuesday. We did get a statement from HP yesterday, which I'll share in a minute. But let's get to the offer itself, because people close to the situation indicate it was for $22 for each HPQ share, $17 of which would be in cash, and 0.137 Xerox shares for the remaining. So you're talking roughly a 77% component of cash, the remainder in Xerox stock, a stock of which, of course, is up sharply over the last year, contrasted with HPQ, which was near its recent lows until, of course, news of this potential bid made its way into the marketplace. They're talking about as much as $2 billion in expected cost synergies. And by the way, given the cash and stock component, what you would end up with at the end is a new company that would be 48% owned by current Hewlett-Packard shareholders, 52% by Xerox. Why is that important? Well, Xerox is going to play up the fact that they believe their management team is the right one to deliver on these $2 billion in expected cost synergies and would have the effect, they say, of course. And by the way, their management team is comprised of a lot of ex-HPers. I think there's at least five in the senior management
top team
alone,
is all
ex-HPers, including CEO John Valentin, who I think ran services there at HP. But at close, you are talking about a highly levered company. Now, they've talked about, in fact, I reported yesterday, they believe it would still be investment grade, but it would be roughly five times levered, given, of course, the debt that they would be adding to buy what would be roughly $23 billion or so in stock, the 77% component that is cash. Perhaps it'd be a bit more than that. The price itself, 22, although interestingly, Xerox share price up yesterday along with shares of HP. We don't see that often. Is it a result of an embrace by all shareholder bases of the combination? And by the way, there is a decent overlap in the shareholder bases of both companies, not something to be overlooked. Or is it because, in part, some people also believe that Xerox could find itself on the receiving end of a takeover bid from HP, given the huge discrepancy in relative size here of the two companies? Unclear, but they were both up. That obviously does have the impact of raising the actual price being offered, given 0.137 Xerox shares would be exchanged for roughly 23% of HP. They do expect to delever very quickly. Talking about the cash flow generating characteristics of this combined company, being able to take leverage down from what would be five times at close to as little as three times within 24 months. So we can tell you at this point that is, according to my sources, the offer that was delivered to HP. What did HP have to say about it? They put out a weird statement.
No, it wasn't that weird.
Oh, it was weird.
It was not, because I've worked on this.
Really? It was weird.
Yes, I worked on it.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know what I'll say then? What I will say is it was out of character in a typical takeover situation.
Well, it was not. It was
seemed to me to have
no
been
animosity,
written perhaps by a philosophy major rather than somebody who's actually focused on business.
I never took philosophy.
That said, they did say that most recently they received a proposal that was transmitted from the company, and then they went on to say they have a record of taking action if there's a better path forward and will continue to act with deliberation, discipline, and an eye towards what is in the best interest of all their shareholders, Jim.
Okay, so January 2018, they made a bid. Suggested kind of like a fungible bid, 2018. At that point, Xerox was involved with unwinding the Fuji deal.
Right, which there was no way for them to buy it.
Okay, so here's what
they had,
I understand.
The crown jewel lockup that was part of the Fujifilm joint venture.
My sources indicate that while they're certainly open to anything that benefits shareholder, Enrique Lores had put out together a plan. I don't know if you got a chance to do the plan at the big analyst meeting, and he wants a chance to be able to put the plan through.
Right.
And I don't blame him one bit. The plan, by the way, is much more about getting away from printers than it is to go deeper in printers.
Mm-hmm.
Much more what I regard as a digitization play, hardware digitization. That is not what you get if you merge with Xerox. So they're kind of don't want to do in terms of strategy. But nobody denies that there wouldn't be substantial synergies. Whatever, and they'll do it.
No, there would be substantial synergies. This is, of course, a far smaller company going after a far larger one.
So it would be reversed.
That was recently at its lows. They are talking about that price at 22 being roughly a 29% premium to the VWAP for the shares over fairly recent periods. So not an insignificant premium, as was indicated to me yesterday.
Right.
Real significant. We can debate whether it's enough, certainly, to move the ball here. What I will tell you is I do sense, Jim, that there is great fervor on the Xerox side to try to make this happen. January 24th, I believe, is the close of the nominating window for HP's board of directors, all of whom are up. Would they move to a proxy fight? I certainly can't dismiss that as a possibility at this point, though it's unclear what their shareholders, and don't forget there is overlap. That always does prove to be an important part of the strategic merits of these kinds of deals and how they're going to be considered. But whether or not those shareholders would agree at 22, very much unclear.
The statement and things that I've learned indicate to me that there's zero animosity, which would therefore surprise me for a proxy fight. I think that they just want Mr. Loris to have a shot here. Remember,
I think
DM
there's any chance that Hewlett-Packard would just say, let us buy you?
Yes. I do think at a certain point. It's not in their plan, though.
Right.
So we got to give Mr. Loris a couple of quarters. Remember, he took it over by surprise because D.M. Weisler is retiring right now because of a family health issue. I think that if Mr. Loris had not laid out the plan, if they had not, David, if they had done this right when Dion said he's done or he's going to leave, I think it would have had a much better chance. But Mr. Loris has a pretty defined plan.
Well, you know what? In part, Xerox couldn't do it until they actually had the $2.3 billion in cash coming in. They do have a highly confident letter from Citi to finance the deal. It would be a lot of debt, as we said, although the cash flow
would be the other way, I
think.
But they're not enemies. It's not an Elliott kind of Nielsen thing.
I still say that was a weird statement.
It was weird, so that's why you had to, you know?
Oh, you agree now it was weird.
No. It's not weird in the context
of... I've covered about a million... M&A situations?
I've covered one.
A weird letter.
This one. And it was not as weird once you start realizing that they were trying not to be angry.
Okay. That's a good point.
They were angry. Yeah, well, we should take a break, David, make some money for the network, and we have a podcast, too. And Andrew's the greatest person ever.
When we come back, Cramer's Mad Dash and the opening bell. Plus, we'll get the big movers of the morning. There's a lot to get to. As we said earlier, Qualcomm, Roku. We're going to hear from both of those CEOs later on Squawk Alley in the 11 a.m. hour. Look for record highs as the S&P industrials have posted their first record high in more than a year. Dow futures up 141.
All right, 15 minutes before we get started with trading here at the New York Stock Exchange, time to fit in a mad dash. We're going to have a lot of earnings to cover in terms of at least how the stocks perform. Let's get to Qualcomm kind of early here. It is going to be a stellar performance.
Well, the analysts were not ready for what is basically the quarter we expected, say, three or four quarters from now. 5G happening much faster. You've got 230 5G devices up from 150. Dave, that's for Internet of Things. Everyone's rolling this out fast. Remember our friend Cristiano Amon, the scientist, basically engineer at Qualcomm? He's talking about the idea that this is just, please don't think of this as cell phone.
Right.
Think about this as everything. And Qualcomm owns this. You know what, David? They even violated the first rule of Fight Club. They talked about Apple.
They did.
Yeah, they talked about
it. They don't talk
Apple.
Too much about it. You know, I did sit down a couple of months ago, not even, with Ginni Rometty and Hans Vestberg from Verizon and Mollenkopf. And we spoke, as you know, Jim, about the opportunity for 5G in the enterprise. Right. Because even though that's not necessarily a 2020 event, it's coming. And it's perhaps much more substantial than everybody's cell phone.
Yes.
Being able to get video downloads more
quick. I worry about a cable company, as you predicted, because it's going to be faster and
it's
maybe better.
But the Internet of Things is going to be IoT. So central to this, and they're already talking about it.
Yeah. By the way, this is something amazing. They bought back 22% of the company with $23 billion. The basis, 65. 65. Now, that's how you do a buyback. Right when everyone was giving up, they were in there buying because they had conviction. You know, like John Ford has an interview with Steve Mollenkopf.
He did it,
The 11, I think they're going to run some more of that.
Yes.
And David, my favorite thing, Huawei is not even included in the numbers. Can you imagine if the largest cell phone company on Earth was allowed to start getting some parts from Qualcomm, with the software from Qualcomm?
Right. Well,
that would be amazing.
They do have important business in China, though, Qualcomm.
Oh, and they made good deals with the Chinese.
And China is moving quickly in 5G.
Very fast, David.
Very quickly.
Faster than us.
Yes, they are.
We're
not way behind.
Well, Korea's
faster. They're leapfrogging quick. In other words, because they can just say, we're putting this here.
Right.
You got no...
Oh, you mean that this is a totalitarian dictatorship?
Yes.
That executes people because they push fentanyl here?
Yes, there's no rule of law there.
Right.
And therefore, you can get things done a lot quicker.
Well, there's a rule of law. Just like there was when Stalin ran Soviet Union. They got a rule of law.
There is.
Let's talk to Politburo. Let's see what they say.
Steve Mollenkopf. All right, we got a lot more on Squawk on the Street as we count you down to the opening bell. As I said, a lot of earnings to get to as well, whether it's Dish or Fox or Discovery.
Those are all yours.
I know. Well, what do you got?
Ralph Lauren.
All right, there you go. Ralph Lauren, too. Roku. We're back after this.
Futures suggest record highs across the board as the S&P is on track for a fifth weekly gain. On these headlines that the Chinese, at least, say the U.S. and China have agreed to remove tariffs in phases. The opening bell, less than 10 minutes away. You're watching CNBC Squawk on the Street, live from the financial capital of the world. The opening bell and 6.5 minutes, busy Thursday morning. Interesting day at DealBook yesterday. Sorkin had so many speakers, made so much news, but Bill Gates really got everyone's attention when he talked about presidential candidate Senator Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax.
I've paid over $10 billion in taxes. I paid more than anyone in taxes. But I'm glad to have paid, if I'd had to pay $20 billion, it's fine. But when you say I should pay $100 billion, okay, then I'm starting to do a little math about what I have left over. Sorry, I'm just kidding. So you really want the incentive system to be there, and you can go a long ways without threatening that.
Have you ever talked to Elizabeth Warren about any of this before?
I've not.
Would you? Would you want to?
You know, I'm not sure how open-minded she is. Or that she'd even be willing to sit down with somebody, who has large amounts of money.
Senator Warren then offered to sit down with Gates, tweeting, quote, "I'm always happy to meet with people, even if we have different views. Bill Gates, if we get the chance, I'd love to explain exactly how much you'd pay under my wealth tax. I promise it's not $100 billion. Didn't commit to supporting either her or the president. Interesting conversation, but he was trending on Twitter last night.
Yeah, well, you know what? This is kind of reminds me of the Johnny Carson debate. Johnny Carson was the highest paid person in America. He made $25 million. He was in a 70% bracket. And often questioned what the hell he was working so hard for because he's in the 70% bracket. Now, obviously, that's income tax, and people would very quickly say, this is wealth tax. But there is a level where people actually get to where they debate what they're doing. And I think that Elizabeth, the paper yesterday, one time only maybe, look, I think it's worth discussing. Now, there's been some tremendous research about whether it really works. And I'm going to go back to Lee Cooperman, who has done in a very rigorous fashion whether it really produces more for the government than traditional taxing.
Yeah.
And I just think that there's got to be a level where it's not. I always feel that Senator Warren is a little too much antipathy. She's got to drop the antipathy.
She is, yeah.
There's nothing wrong with being more genteel.
How difficult it would be to actually figure out what exactly the tax should be based on assessing somebody's wealth in a given year, because you're talking about things far beyond just their income or their savings.
Right.
Talking about their planes and their wine and their boats and their houses and all those things and their paintings and their art. It seems virtually impossible to sort of figure out without getting into every single. The IRS would become your best friend. They'd be living in your house.
Look, you go back to capital gains and dividend tax. I mean, those were cut. I remember Larry Kudlow, now chief economic advisor. He was the greatest pusher for lower capital gains and dividend. Look, you want something low-hanging fruit, you double both.
Meanwhile,
because rich
Gates,
people
the Gates Foundation
gains.
Has been the single most charitable organization the world has ever seen.
Well, I mean, look, these billionaires.
Period.
I mean, Bloomberg billionaire. I mean, We should. Why not just shame the billionaires that haven't given a dime?
Buffett obviously.
That's what she should be doing.
As the conversation went last night, shaming Bezos for spending money on space, where Gates said he can have it. Malnutrition is more important.
Well, he's got his priorities, and I don't know. It's about time. It's about space. It could be about the human race, for all I know.
Climate's really, really important. Really important.
Look, do you know
we
that
don't talk enough about
Mark Benioff's been talking about how the tree should be the man of the year? Now, he owns Time, but that doesn't necessarily influence who they pick. The tree. If we planted a trillion trees, we would be able to reverse global warming.
That's true.
You have to plant
a trillion. How many? A trillion?
Just a trillion would do it. You don't laugh. 30 cents per tree?
300 million trees in Nigeria in like a very short amount of time.
I'm giving a lot of money to plant trees.
The numbers sound daunting, but you can do it.
You can do it. So, look, I priorities.
Sorry,
I just say,
move on here. Yeah, right.
What? Is someone in your ear saying move on?
Yeah,
no one's in my ear.
They are.
We're going to have plenty of time to talk about Elizabeth Warren after Diamond, Cooperman, Lazary this week on our air. Washington Post reports that her sources close to her campaign love it.
Really?
Love that people are coming on our CNBC and weeping over her policy.
I think she has a soft spot for Diamond, who has spent, who, by the way, has hired more veterans than anyone in our country other than Starbucks. And Diamond stocks break them through 130. Now, Elizabeth Warren's never been that interested in the technical breakout at 130, but I am.
Always worth pointing out that at this point in 2004 or 3, Iowa, this number of days
God, you're
John
doing
Kerry
that again.
Was polling at 4%, and Howard Dean was...
David, it's called a horse race.
Winning
4 years Should ago, it was Chris Christie, John Kasich, Ben Carson, Carly Fiorina. It's a primary.
Look, I used to love the ponies. It's the first turn.
To discuss these
it's the first
the
turn.
Theoretical views and how you're going to address income inequality in this country, which is an enormous issue.
It's a good debate.
But whether or not Elizabeth Warren's really going to be the nominee, I mean, what's...
I may have to have Senator Warren
pause,
debate Jamie Dimon at my conference.
That'd be good.
At my conference.
I'd like to actually
a mythical conference.
Come up and do that at my alma mater. I'd like to have a whole day
a on Tufts model.
Capitalism. Jamie Dimon went to Tufts.
Okay, done.
It's a proud jumbo.
Done.
Guys,
an invite.
Let's do Roku here. Shares getting hammered. Streaming device maker does beat on the top and the bottom line. But losses nearly tripled that of a year ago, spending more efforts to get new subs. We're going to talk to Anthony Wood exclusively on Squawk Alley later on this morning. This got hit pretty hard last night.
Well, Jim. I mean, he did say, look, I mean, point blank, he used, this was also happened to Square, by the way. He said, look, 2020 growth rates are liable to be lower than 2019. You can't have a stock that has that and expect it to go up. He, by the way, is so understated that he will not reverse the direction of Roku stock. I am promising you that.
Same thing has been said about Silverman at Pinterest, right? Understated
yes.
In an environment where losses are less tolerated.
Noah Blackstein this morning, Dynamic, talking about Pinterest. I've gone over that Pinterest quarter with a fine-tooth comb. The problem with Pinterest is it does not practice under-promise and over-deliver. They said that they wouldn't. I urged them to do so. I said, play the game.
Not everybody listens to you, Jim, at their peril.
No, not everybody listens to me.
Yeah.
My dog doesn't listen to me.
No, he doesn't.
Let's get the opening bell here. S&P 500 at the CNBC Real-Time Exchange and the big board celebrating an IPO today. Silvergate Capital, a California commercial bank with a focus on digital currency. At the NASDAQ, it's Youth, Inc., a network of nonprofits supporting young people in New York City.
Fantastic.
Jim mentioned Ralph Lauren earlier. That and PVH are going to lead the way here, Jim.
Well, I have to tell you, I am so impressed with what's going on in Ralph Lauren, because what Ralph Lauren is doing is they're just embracing the social media that nobody else is. They understand that clothes are Instagram. They understand the concept of heat. They also are getting out of the malls that are bad. This is something, by the way, there's a lot of discussion among suppliers. Who's going to just say, you know what, those are empty calories, I don't want to be there. Ralph Lauren is closing the bad ones.
Okay.
That's what we want.
Yep.
They're closing the bad ones. And that's a gutsy move, because it's very hard for some companies to ever admit maybe they have too many stores and too many doors.
U.S. comps up 2, wholesale down 6, and yet this reaction...
I think some of that is because they want to be out. The comps, obviously, is still better than what I was looking for. Patrice Louvet is a different kind of CEO. He's a CEO that says, I know that Capri wants to do this too, not as effective. What he's saying is, we have got to change our mindset and recognize that you can have classic clothes, but you can also have clothes right now that you must wear. That's why their Instagram. So they use Instagram. I don't understand why people realize that's. Now, I know that there are issues. Roku has these fabulous lines, but there's still a lot of advertising just on TV. It's got to move to personalized TV. They still have to move to personalized Instagram. I urge Mark Zuckerberg, I challenge him to start helping the people who are building their brands on Instagram, who aren't as big as Ralph Lauren. That's what he should be focused on, not endless free. Look, he has to talk about free speech. How about money for companies, mom and pops, that are using Instagram?
Ow.
That's what he should. What? What? What?
Sorry. I got a lot of stuff to get to.
What?
I didn't mean to stop you. I was just commenting on my own.
Yeah, no.
As I've gotten older, I just talk out loud all the time now.
I think that Mark Zuckerberg has to start focusing.
I grunt.
There was a really
I talk to myself on the street now. It just happens.
On the subway, too?
The old Ed McMahon. Yeah, you are correct.
Johnny and Ed. I mean, this is a throwback shit. Throwback Thursday.
It is a
throwback. I love Johnny. Frontier Briss.
The king.
Was he really the highest paid person in America?
$25 million
Yeah.
On television.
You got to read.
Not in America.
No, he was. You have to go read Bushnick, his book, The Guy, the Lawyer. It actually, there's a great chapter about how he's the highest paid man in America.
Because he deserved to be.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying that he was also the hardest working man. And he was even more than James Brown.
He took 3 days a week.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
He hated Joan Rivers by the end, you know, because she betrayed him.
Yes, she did. She went to Fox.
Bushkin.
Jim, you mentioned Instagram. Let's quickly do Twitter. It's in the same neighborhood.
Oh,
downgraded at Evercore today.
That's to underperform.
They call it, the title of the report is Tailspin. And their argument is that they've benefited from underinvestment. That's what led to the ad bug problem in the quarter.
You know, that this cries out. We got to talk about Square and Twitter. There are now the undercurrent when you speak to people about this is, Jack, pick one. The two thing ain't working anymore. CEO of both. It's not working.
What about those Saudis? That was...
To former employees.
Correct. Former employees
who
were using it to spy on potential dissidents on behalf of the Saudi government. That was a little frightening.
Zuckerberg, if that was Zuckerberg, they'd hang him in effigy. But no, it's Dorsey, and he's loved. Dorsey fought the attack, the homeless tax.
I know. All right, guys, let me start off with a couple of names we're watching this morning as well. Dish reported earnings. The big news there for the satellite direct broadcast company that obviously also has ambitions to become a nationwide provider of 5G wireless services is they didn't lose any subscribers. They actually increased 148,000.
Really?
That's obviously with their OTT offering, but also their direct broadcast. Yeah, that was compared to a decline of 341,000 for the third quarter of last year. That was a surprise. Stock's up. They also hire a couple of people in the wireless industry to join their executive team to help start to build this possible wireless network they're talking about, right, with the divestitures they're getting if in fact Sprint and T-Mobile goes forward. By the way, Charlie Ergen's going to be a key witness in the states that are opposing the deal. They're going to have to bring him in because they're going to put him on the stand, I guess, potentially, or at least question their business model and whether or not that company, Dish, is going to really be a competitor in a real way and be able to raise the billions upon billions that it needs to actually build out a wireless track.
What did you think about the rights offering? It's very unusual to see a stock go up on a rights offering.
Yes.
For a billion,
speaking of raising the money, they have a $1 billion rights offering. All Dish stockholders granted the right to participate in the offering, subscribe for newly issued shares on a pro rata basis, and as Jim says, subscription price will be $33.52. So there you go, below where we are right now.
Very big.
As Jim said, it's not often you see a $1 billion rights offering accompanied by a move up in the stock. Guys, plenty of other names. We've got Disney reporting after the close today. And that's going to be interesting because there is an expectation on the part of some investors that you may get, and I don't know if this is the case, some sort of EPS range that incorporates their expectations and or the losses that they will be dealing with as they launch Disney Plus. Also some question about the parks. Remember, attendance was down last quarter, even though revenue was up because they raised price. And so there'll be a focus on attendance at the parks as well. Also, China, HK, what's been going on in Hong Kong, did that affect things
Stock's
there at
been
all?
Stock's been hanging here as if it's going to disappoint.
And will they give you an EPS range, Jim, is a question at least I've been getting from some investors. And what will it be?
I don't know. I mean, I think that you own this, don't trade it. But I just think that there was one thing that was certain. Bob Iger said, look, it's not a 2020 thing. Now, typically a lot of companies right now are looking at 2020 numbers. I don't think he's in a position to really talk about 2020.
Iger's on the cover of Business Week. It's just his face. It says, don't mess with Bob, I believe is the title. And then, of course, Hastings, a deal book yesterday saying that of the rivals from which they have the most to learn, it's Disney.
Well, look, I think that there is an element of everybody, you know, people are getting very bullish about Disney+. You know, I heard some people get bullish about Apple TV.
And yeah.
Yeah, I'm not kidding.
Wait, say again.
Apple TV.
What about it?
That they have the ability, of course, they can spend any amount of money to develop.
They can.
Well, I'm just saying that people
they
are loving all these over-the-tops that you were the first to talk about. You were the first to talk about it and starting to really get some
traction. Well, the streaming wars are in full bloom. There's no doubt about that. Speaking of that, a company like Discovery oftentimes is lumped in with those who, well, what's going to be the strategy? Do you have the networks that actually could compete? Can't really put together a direct-to-consumer, and if you did, you'd crush your business because of the margins you get, obviously, with the current model of distribution. Stock's up, though. Why? Well, they beat on the EBITDA line. They do, next quarter, I think they do lap the affiliate fee growth that they saw. By the way, the leverage has come way down, as they said it would, from the Scripps deal. I think they're down to 3x levered, so they did delever rapidly, given, again, strong cash flow there. But that stock having a good morning, as is Fox, which also had better than expected numbers, although sub losses still overall in the universe. People are cord cutting.
Yeah, that's it.
And so you can get your affiliate fee growth. You can get, you know, more money, but there's fewer people in your universe, plain and simple. Not all of them are going to the OTT platforms, whether it's the YouTube channels or any of them. They're not all of them are going. You lose them.
Okay.
And we suffer from that, too. Everybody does in the cable universe as it continues to contract, although at least good news today from Dish, they didn't lose any subscribers.
What's the lowest price earnings multiple in the S&P 500?
The lowest?
Yeah.
CVS.
Yeah.
I got it right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I think that Viacom CVS, most compressed 5x earnings for Viacom. I think this one is oversold.
Yeah.
I think this one can rally when the deal closes.
You do.
Deal
will close about a month from now.
Yes.
CBS
now. So
Viacom.
It's amazing how there are so few people who actually agree with what I just said. They just feel that this is, when you talk about cord cut, everyone always thinks, like Viacom cord cut. And I don't think that's right, because it's CBS. CBS has some very good properties. And they, by the way, they locked up a lot of sports. It's not like they're Alphabet, which is also, there's a negative strip at Alphabet, nothing about this, but it's not like Alphabet and Amazon are going to come in and take all those contracts away. It'd be easier to buy CBS than it would get those contracts.
Finally, speaking of television, remember Nielsen, which was for sale for quite some time?
Yeah,
undermanaged. Holder. They announced this strategic review process has ended, and they're going to spin off their Global Connect business. It's not doing anything positive for the stock price, which falls below $20 a share at Nielsen. We had Ed Norton on yesterday talking about the failure of Nielsen.
He was a really good guest.
Yeah.
Ed Norton,
EDO.
He's a smart seller.
His effort to sort of change the way things are measured and the actual buying that occurs as a result of somebody seeing an ad. But there's Nielsen. Look at that, Jim.
You just moved Discovery $1.70.
I did?
Yeah, you did. Okay. Could you move up Viacom? My travel trust owns it.
No.
Please?
I'm not.
No, please. I'm begging you.
No,
it's the worst stock, the worst performing stock I have had since the initial original Charter and also Apache.
You're hanging in there on Viacom, though. You got to wait at this point.
At this point, you have to.
There'll be some benefits.
No, maybe it's an oil stock and I don't know it. Maybe Chesapeake owes it money. That's, by the way, when you see these pipeline companies, why are they not going in? Chesapeake owes everybody money.
Well,
David, we're not even covering Chesapeake.
Given the tone because of Discovery and Fox, CBS and Viacom are both up today.
Really?
Yeah. You're having a good
morning. Is it thermonuclear war? I thought Viacom can only go up in an event of thermonuclear war.
Well, from CBS Channel 2, as Jim calls it, to CVS, you did talk to Larry Malone.
Yeah, well, I say that because I bought 50,000 CBS
told this
by
story
mistake.
A couple hundred times.
Yes, exactly. Also, the $1.49 French's mustard that I got when I was in Louisiana. My team makes me fun of that.
Here's what he told Jim last night on Mad Money.
Were you surprised to hear that some chatter about Walgreens going private, given the fact that all they've really been doing is doubling down on the part of your store that I know that you're always worried about?
Well, you know, Jim, I certainly can't comment on rumors that we see in the marketplace, but, you know, we are very excited about our strategy. As you said, we talked earlier this year. You know, it was on a piece of paper, but, you know, that vision, that strategy is coming to life in a meaningful way. And what we're hearing, what we're seeing from, you know, our consumers, our clients, the payers, is validating, you know, that strategy is, in fact, the right one.
Look, I mean, I think that he's kind of candidly saying, I don't know. I mean, that's their strategy is one of basically doubling down on the worst part, the front of the store. CVS is indeed a health company. You should see those new stores of the future, the hub. You walk in and, it looks like you're heading into a ready clinic. When you go into Walgreens, it looks like you're heading to a candy store. How's the tobacco business there, Ward? Remember that Merlot took that $2 billion hit on tobacco? He said, what can... He is now adamant talking about Juul, which, by the way, the Chinese are anti-Juul just last night, saying, listen, no more vaping. If you ask them for what the cause is, it's Juul.
They're also banning, you can only have 90 minutes of video game time if you're a kid and not after 10 o'clock.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Could that hurt Take-Two Interactive?
It could hurt Tencent. It could hurt a bunch of them over there, yes.
I like that group. There are a bunch of them reports that
are. I haven't even taken a look to think about the implications for names like that, but...
Well, this conversation we're having right now has likely been blacked out if you were watching us in Beijing.
No, that's not possible.
Oh, it happens all the time.
All the time. Eunice Yoon tells us all the time when she's watching, she lost us.
I mean, like, just
people
like...
People who sit there with a button.
I say let 1,000 flowers bloom. I say the Cultural Revolution was really about culture and not executions. I praise the Eighth Army for all the bridges they built. Is that blacked out, too?
We might be back.
Lu Xin, great writer. Have you ever read the stories Lu Xin did?
I have not.
Dynamite.
Xerox and HP both up again. I want to point that out after we gave people the deal terms.
Not blacked out.
From the sources, $22 a share is what was offered. 17 of that is cash. The rest in stock, Xerox stock.
That's because
both
of that cryptic.
Are higher.
It's because of the cryptic nature of the release, which is basically, hey, we don't hate you. It's like 10 Bears. Remember 10 Bears in Outlaw Josie Whale?
Mm-hmm.
Came in peace. 10 Bears. My name is 10 Bears. I come in peace.
It was an interesting release.
Faber College was in that.
Yes, it was. Knowledge is good. And don't forget, Jim, drunk, fat, and stupid is no way to go through life.
He's a sage. He reminds me of it's Confucius meets Gandhi.
Let's see. Dow's up almost 200, and we are 5 points from 3,100. Let's get to Bob Pisani. Bob?
Carl, good morning, everybody. New highs here, and the important thing is we don't know much about when these tariffs will be rolled back, but that's moving the markets. And what's really important is the yields. We're seeing bond yields move up. We're near the highest level since July, and that's moving European stocks. All these bank stocks in Europe are up, and of course, all the autos. This is all trade talk related. We're up here. It's the same thing here. We're seeing our bank stocks move up. They're in the new high list as well. They've been getting a little frothy recently, so take a look at sectors here in the U.S. Bank stocks are up. We're seeing semiconductors up. This is all that whole energy play. There's semi, China stocks, SMHI, consumer staples, of course, are lagging. That usually happens when we see this kind of play going on. Let's take a look at the new high on the transports, because this is very important. Yes, there's still Dow theorists out there who like it. We've got a new high on the transports here, finally confirming the new high on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Very important for the technicians and the Dow theorists. Where are we here? A lot of people trying to argue we should be in a new trading range. This is a little bit iffy, but here's that range here. Just take a look here. For the last 2 years, we've been here, now we've been here, and now we're trading up here, and some people are saying, oh, here's our new trading range. It's just north of 3,000. I don't know. It's a little early to say that, but it's early. Bulls are out there saying that we've got a new trading range that's going to be in. What will determine that? Well, we know. We know the marginal movers of the market this year. The Federal Reserve, China trade, and global growth. There is a neutral. There is a neutral to positive. And here is some popium as well here. Maybe global growth isn't as bad. So it's obvious why we're on the upside. Neutral, neutral to hope, and neutral to hope here. That's why the market is moving up. Let's take a look at a couple other things here. We're getting a little frothy, though. Have you seen some of these investor sentiment surveys? These aren't useful until they're really, really at new highs, but some of them are up there. Bulls and bears are rather high. Bulls up around 40%. Just want to talk about MSCI. China weighting in the global indexes are going up. The important thing here is that the MSCI is announcing that they're increasing the China weightings. If you put up the China weightings here, China was about, 3%, mainland China in the weightings in these, that's going to go up to 4% on November 26th. They're announcing these new weightings today, later in the day. Hong Kong is at 21. China, U.S. listed, is listed at 8 right now. So this weighting is going to go up to 4%. You see other ones like South Korea, 12. They're basically going to stay the same. Why is this happening? Because China is underrepresented in the global indexes, and these global index providers, which are what the basis of these ETFs are saying, we want to increase the weighting to more accurately reflect the global situation. So there you see South Korea. The problem, of course, is that some people are objecting to this. Senator Marco Rubio, in particular, has been very vocal, arguing that U.S. government employees should not have these stocks in their pensions. He's going to be on at 10:45 Eastern time. And, Carl, this was not a very controversial topic until a few months ago when we had the whole issues with tariffs. We'll hear what Senator Rubio has to say about that. Back to you.
All right, Bob. Thank you very much, Bob Pisani. The curve continues to steepen. Let's get to Rick Santelli in Chicago. Rick?
Carl, not only does the curve continue to steepen, global interest rates are heating up. I've been on this tune for a while, but it goes in fits. And today, fits exactly what's going on. Let's just think about this. Many aren't really super optimistic about Europe, but maybe there are certain signs things aren't as bad as they seem. But no matter how you slice it, many corporations in Europe are really tapping the credit markets. Countries are tapping the credit markets. And big supply, just think about it this way. If Europe's numbers start to get better, we could really have a bit of a tantrum on our hands globally. Look at an intraday of tens. Zoom, zoom, zooming. As a matter of fact, let's zoom the chart all the way back to the middle of July. You can see the only thing between us now and maybe more follow through the upside is that September 13th high close of 190. We're one basis point away. Here's the tens minus twos Carl's talking about. It's hovering just below 24 basis points. It continues to steepen. It's gaining a couple of basis points today as we're up 6 and 10s, up 4 and 2s. Here is the star of the show, 10-year boons. Look at this one-week chart. It's a stairway to heaven with respect to higher yields. And when the 10 billion euros of oats, long-dated French securities, started to be talked about, we see selling of other securities, maybe to make room, but supply in and of itself is bearish. Look at a May 1st, the boons, highest yield since mid-July, and finally, trade talks continue to progress. Remember, compromise isn't a bad word. Look at how the dollar continues to deteriorate against the Chinese currency. Carl, Jim, David, back to you.
All right, Rick, thank you very much. Coming up this morning, two exclusive interviews you do not want to miss. The CEO of Qualcomm, Steve Mollenkopf, will join us, and Roku CEO Anthony Wood. Stocks going in different directions this morning. That's coming up on Squawk Alley. Record highs across the board, and we're close to 3,100. We're back after this. Record highs across the board, as we said before the break, as we're above 27.6, getting awfully close to 3,100, and the NASDAQ as well. NASDAQ 100 as well for the record high. Stop Trading with Jim is in a minute. Let's get to Jim and stop trading.
Okay, when you usually see a stock up 25%, you think it's David's world. You think it must be a takeover, but it's Dexcom, and it does glucose monitoring, the best ones. And it's Kevin Sayer just on fire. They did another quarter that I would have expected two or three quarters from now. Unfortunately, there's an epidemic of diabetes, and they have the tools to make it so that you can live in a normal fashion, as best as normal as you can be. So my hat's off to them for just building a better mousetrap.
All right, Jim, how about tonight?
Okay, we have Brixmore. I'm trying to get the sense of malls. We have CyrusOne. This is really important. This is data center. And, you know, there's a split between people who think the data center is slowing and people who think it's accelerating. Gary knows more than anyone, so we're going to solve the problem of knowing today.
That has a broad impact.
And you know, it's the biggest source of hardware and software in this country is the data center.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.